Hello and welcome to Sports Report Podcast, episode 35. I'm Billy. Alejandro and Aiden are here today. We've missed a lot, though, in the past 2 weeks that we haven't been recording, so let's just get right into some of the stuff. Obviously, we haven't talked about the Super Bowl yet, so let's talk about that. I came into the Super Bowl thinking the Chiefs were going to win pretty heavily just because of Brady and the Bucs, you know, having all these weapons and stuff, but during the season, obviously, they had a lot of struggles. Bruce Arians, I thought the coaching wasn't going to be good enough to really carry the Bucs to a victory over the Chiefs, which eventually did happen. I thought the Arians coaching staff, you know, Byron Leftwich and the D coordinators for that Bucs team are great. Those are great. Just Bruce Arians is such a clown in my eyes still. Even with the Super Bowl, I think Brady mostly carried him to it, you know. Arians before the Super Bowl even saying that Brady was really the main reason why they kind of got to where they are, and that he just let Brady take over with play calling. And really, Brady was basically a coach player that whole entire season, it seems. And they really turned it on in the playoffs. Now, I thought the Chiefs were just too good for this. Obviously, they had Andy Reid, you have Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman, Travis Kelce, Mahomes. The one thing that I didn't realize, though, is how important the offensive line would be. Now, I thought the Chiefs, even without Eric Fisher on that line, I thought they would still hold up. Now, they had Remmers over there just getting, you know, you got Shaq Barrett and Pierre-Paul coming off the edges, and then you got Devin White in the middle, and I didn't realize how bad for the Chiefs that would be. Now, the Bucs defense, I've realized that's been elite. You know, I said that the NFC Championship mostly was because of that Bucs defense pressuring Rodgers, not giving him enough time. And, you know, if Rodgers had a normal amounts of time, that game they probably would have won. Because the main reason why that Packers team didn't win the NFC Championship is really because Rodgers just made bad decisions under pressure, which you can't have. So I didn't realize that that Bucs defense was going to decimate the Chiefs just as bad as they did. Now, here's an interesting stat from that. The pressures, which is the key, obviously, to why the Chiefs lost this game. Mahomes played his heart out. You had all those. He was running every single snap, it seems. He was doing like the Josh Allen. Just he'd get the ball out. He'd throw it without looking, falling down, and he'd get it like 40 yards downfield and into the receiver's hands. Even then, the receivers just lost their hands for the first time all season, it seemed, for the Chiefs, which is just super unfortunate. But anyways, the O-line for the Chiefs couldn't hold up. The Bucs had 38 pressures, which is insane, even for the Bucs defense. The Chiefs only had 5. So that really showed that the Chiefs still have their defensive flaws that people have been talking about for a couple of years now, even though the defense did improve this year, it seemed. And I thought that would be a big part. That, you know, last year when they were in the Super Bowl against the 49ers, I thought the Chiefs defense was going to be a big, big problem. It wasn't necessarily then. It was a little bit. But now it definitely was, which I did not expect. Is this is an improved defense. You got Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark. Chris Jones up the middle. I thought they'd get so much more pressures than they actually did. And they just really couldn't get to Brady. Even as a pocket quarterback, you know, Mahomes is a mobile guy. You'd think the pocket quarterback would get pressured way more, but he didn't. Only 5 pressures coming from the Chiefs. So just really unfortunate there. Anyways, some more stats from the game. Mahomes was 26 for 49, 270 yards. He had 2 interceptions. Those pressures played a big part in those interceptions. I mean, Mahomes just couldn't get it. Just like Rodgers, I mean, the Bucs defense has been excellent this postseason in pressuring the quarterback and making sure that they can't get the ball out consistently and overall just having time in the pocket to make their reads and make a good decision. Mahomes and Rodgers both didn't have that, and Mahomes certainly got the worst of it with those 2 picks, only 270, not even a touchdown. The run game for the Chiefs, though, was working. 9 carries and 64 yards, 7.1 yards per carry from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Mahomes also earlier in the game was just running every play, it seemed, and that was working. But they didn't really run. Travis Kelce dropped a ton of passes. So when you, it was unbelievable when I saw after the game that Kelce had 10 receptions for 133. He played way worse than what his stat line would tell you. I mean, he was dropping balls all over the place, and they couldn't really just get anything done. So him being the leading receiver is just really shocking there. Chiefs only putting up 9 points also is crazy. On the other side, Brady was 21 for 29, 201, and 3 touchdowns. Very, very consistent passer. Didn't have to do a lot because that defense just set him up so well. But that got the job done, was consistent, and didn't make mistakes, and that's what you need to do in this game. I thought this would be way closer. I said before the game, if this game is going to be a blowout like it turned out to be, it'd be the Chiefs blowing out the Bucks instead of the Bucks blowing out the Chiefs just because of the offense, and I thought the Chiefs just were more consistent, better offensive coaching, and just better, not necessarily better weapons, but weapons that are playing up to their potential, if you know what I mean. Just because earlier in the season, the Bucks weapons were not playing up to their potential at all. Evans was playing well, but Gronk was playing little to no good football besides for his blocking, which has been impactful all season. Antonio Brown was iffy all season, things like that. But they definitely overcame it this offseason and postseason. And certainly in the Super Bowl. Leonard Fournette had 16 carries for 89 yards and a touchdown. Ronald Jones also added 12 carries for 61. So the run game was there definitely for them. Gronk was a big player in this game. He had 6 receptions for 67 yards and 2 touchdowns. Gronk was all over the place. He was looking like his old self, really. He was there for Brady and was the leading receiver for this Bucs team. Then behind him was checkdowns to Leonard Fournette. He had 4 receptions for 46 yards. Pretty good there. Cameron Bray adding in with 3 receptions for 26 yards. OJ Howard is going to be interesting to see what role he plays in this offense next year if they do bring back Gronk, because Cameron Bray seems to have a really good connection with Brady, and Gronk also, you know, is the number one pretty much for this Bucs team unless he leaves in free agency, which he possibly could. I doubt he does, though, because it seems like he's very set on either staying in Tampa Bay or retiring. So he'll probably stay in Tampa. Brown had 5 receptions for 22 yards and a touchdown. So little to no production there, but still got some stuff done. So overall, pretty good game. The defensive numbers, though, for the Bucs were pretty, pretty good. Devin White had an interception, also with 8 tackles. There was arguments that he maybe should have deserved Super Bowl MVP over Brady, which I could agree with. I mean, you could give the Super Bowl MVP to that whole entire defense. Just very, very good for the Bucs. And, yeah, Bucs win the Super Bowl. Congrats to them. It was not super entertaining, but just a dominant showing by the Bucs. And they have their second Super Bowl ever, which is surprising to say, from pretty much the losingest franchise in the history of the NFL. Now has 2 Super Bowls. It's just crazy to see. Mahomes, it was also reported after the Super Bowl, he's going to have toe surgery, and Brady's going to have minor knee surgery. So Mahomes, I'm sure, will get over toe surgery. He'll be completely fine with that. Just normal stuff. And Brady, it's a minor knee surgery. It's concerning seeing that Brady's 43 and, you know, knees are pretty important to a quarterback of that age, but we'll definitely see with that one. It's minor, though, so I'm sure he'll be fine. He'll be ready to go next season. I don't expect the Bucs. You know, I've been down on the Bucs, and it bit me in the ass this year, certainly. But next year, I'm pretty sure the Bucs aren't going to repeat unless they do really good in free agency, which they probably will do pretty decent, seeing as that they have so much lure to them right now. I just don't see them repeating with what's coming into the NFC. And that brings us into our next topic, which is Matthew Stafford being traded from the Detroit Lions to the LA Rams for 2 first-round picks, Jared Goff and a 3rd-round pick. First of all, the Rams completely overpaid. There was a stat that I saw that the only first-round pick that they actually still have on their payroll right now that they drafted since like 2010 is Aaron Donald, which is a pretty good first-round pick, but crazy that they've just or wasted so many first round picks. It's pretty insane. But Stafford, obviously, this is a big upgrade. The Rams, what we've been saying, you know, they beat the Seahawks, which was unexpected, but their defense played well. They have great weapons around them. A great run game with Darrell Henderson and Cam Akers is a 1-2 punch. And then you also got Brown in the backfield there too, who can also add a little bit extra to their offensive play calling. And obviously Kupp and Woods and Josh Reynolds and Tyler Higbee and all that. A very good offense. Defense, obviously, very good. Arguably the best cornerback in the league in Jalen Ramsey. And then the defensive player of the year in Aaron Donald there also. So you bring in Matthew Stafford, who I loved. I wanted the Patriots to go get really bad. Obviously, seeing this price for a 30-something-year-old guy, not too thrilled if they were to make that trade. I'm happy that they didn't. But I love Matthew Stafford. I think that he is an elite quarterback if you put him in a good system. He's never played with more than one good weapon on the Lions. I mean, he had Calvin Johnson, obviously one of the best wide receivers of all time. But other than that, you had like Nate Burleson beside him, Brandon Pettigrew or something like that. He never had good coaching either. And really just the team was never fully built around him. They'd give him little things like a Galladay or a Megatron or something like that. They did give him the one good weapon, and then they just think that he can do all the rest. And he definitely put up amazing stats. He had 44 touchdowns, I think, in 2011. It's not on the screen right now. That's just what I'm thinking. I'm pretty sure he had that. You know, he plays through a ton of injuries. It came out that he was playing with an injury this season. Even with how bad the Lions were doing, it's just crazy. There's the famous clip of him against the Browns when he injures his throwing arm, and he goes in there and throws the game-winning touchdown and everything. He's just a really, really tough fighter, Matthew Stafford, and a great player who hasn't played on great rosters with the Detroit Lions and has just been with struggling rosters, and he keeps playing no matter what. Yeah, he played with a torn UCL this whole entire season for a team that he knew and probably everybody knew wasn't going to do anything in the playoffs or make it to the playoffs even. He still played with it. Now you put him with the Rams. Best team he is probably ever going to be able to play for is this Rams team. This Rams roster going into next year is way better than anything the Lions have ever had. Now, Megatron, obviously, and Reggie Bush, those type of years with the Lions were good. The solid rosters, but nothing as good as what this Rams roster all around is. Now, he'll never have a wide receiver that's better than Calvin Johnson. Never in his whole entire life. There's now the receiver in the NFL that's better than Calvin Johnson right now. But all around team, this is the best one that he could have possibly, like, that he is ever going to play for, most likely. So I think the Rams right now are probably, not officially yet, I'm still thinking about it, it's early, but as of right now, if I had to pick a team that's going to win the Super Bowl next year, Super Bowl 56, my pick is the Los Angeles Rams. This team beat the Seahawks this year with Jared Goff, who had his hand messed up, and Wolford as their starter until he got carried off. They beat the Seahawks with that team. And the Seahawks are a solid team. They're not perfect, but they're a very, very solid team. So now you bring Matthew Stafford into the fold, who's a full-fledged elite quarterback. I'm not afraid to say it. He is an elite quarterback. You bring him into the fold for that Los Angeles Rams team. There isn't a limit to how far this Rams team can go. And I think this Rams team can compete with a Brady Buccaneers team. It definitely can. It's undoubtedly the best team in the NFC West. I love the Cardinals, but they're still struggling. Cliff Kingsbury is a young coach. He still needs to figure that stuff out. I think the Cardinals will probably make the playoffs next year, but they are definitely struggling. And then you got the Seahawks. The Seahawks, you know, they're having problems with Russell Wilson right now, and that can be big, big trouble for them. So I think the Rams are probably the best team in the NFC West right now, the Los Angeles Rams. And I wouldn't be afraid to say that they are the best team in the NFC. Now, we definitely have to see them play. But based off of their roster alone, what I think their potential can be, their good coaching with Sean McVay, they already made a Super Bowl with Jared Goff, who, as we know, not a great quarterback, average, doesn't really have a high ceiling. Now you have Stafford, who's an elite quarterback. You're not going to need those two first-round picks, really, because you have your roster set up. They're prepared to go all in. This team right now can go to the Super Bowl. This team definitely can go to the Super Bowl. And man, it's a sexy team. This is a sexy team to look at. And I can't wait to watch them play. This is going to be a very, very good team. Then we get to the Detroit end of the deal. They got Jared Goff, two first-round picks, and a third-round pick. They already have the number seven overall pick. So they're in prime position to draft a quarterback right now. Trey Lance at number seven can make a big difference for this team. Now, we have the Eagles who got rid of Wentz now. They could be in a quarterback hunt. I don't think they should go for that. But you have the first two picks. You know those are going to be a quarterback. It's going to be Lawrence, and it's going to be probably Zach Wilson. Fields is falling down draft boards due to the struggles with the Ohio State offensive system that so many quarterbacks have come into the NFL and struggled because of such an easy system. So Fields could be available at seven, which I wouldn't be opposed to. Still a lot of risks there. And then Trey Lance, who I don't think has a ton of risk. It's just he's coming from the FCS level and, you know, he has all the intangibles, strong arm. He's basically Josh Allen 2.0, just with better stats in college, way better stats in college. And I don't think people say that Trey Lance is going to be kind of guy who needs to learn for a year, which is still very, very acceptable point. But when you talk about Josh Allen, he started year one. He wasn't great year one, but I think Lance year one is going to be way better than Josh Allen year one if he does start. So I don't see why, you know, Wyoming is basically FCS at this point. Wyoming's not a great team. Not great competition that you're going to get. The best competition you're going to get is Boise State if you play at Wyoming. So I think Lance, overall, not throwing an interception in his whole entire first season, 28 touchdowns, he's great on the ground, big body type of guy, strong arm, can run. Just overall a really good player. I think he could be ready to go year one. Now with the Lions, he could definitely struggle. Seeing as that, even if they trade Kenny Golladay, which they can, they're expected to tag him. But even if they do trade Golladay or keep him, it's still going to be a struggle in that offense. But I think he can fight through it, obviously, with year one. And it's if you really do need a bench from year one, Goff is a good placeholder. He's not going to be bad for you. He's just going to be average. So I think it's a good placeholder that they got there. Also, the third round pick. So you got some value there. I think the Lions won this trade, but the Rams definitely overpaid, but it's what they had to do to get them to the next step. And like I said, if you can get a Super Bowl out of this, that's a win. That's a win for you. If they can't get a Super Bowl out of this, then, you know, I think you'll look back on it and say, should the Rams have done this trade still? And I think you would have said yes. Because they're not in position to get a really good quarterback out of the draft anyways, and that's what they need. All the other problems are filled. Besides for maybe some depth, which you still have that in a lot of positions, like running back, with young guys who aren't getting paid a lot in salary. So I think you'll look back in 2 years and say, even if they didn't make the Super Bowl or win one, I think the trade's still going to be worth it for the Rams. That being said, I think the trade's also worth it for Detroit because Stafford wasn't going anywhere in Detroit. He wanted out anyways. And you came out with this gold mine of picks and a placeholder at quarterback who maybe could work out. So we'll see here, but both teams, I think, made out pretty well for overall, like, both their team needs. Now on to the Seahawks. Teams are reportedly reaching out for the Seahawks. Russell Wilson. Wilson came out and really talking about his frustrations with the team overall. He's frustrated with their lack of an offensive line, which has been a big problem for the Seahawks. They've been trying to kind of patch it up, but it hasn't been working. Mike Iupati, actually, their offensive guard, is retiring, so that there's another one that's gone. I don't think Wilson's going to be traded at all, but it's still a possibility. There's reports that came out that the floor for a deal, reportedly a third of the NFL has reached out for Russell Wilson, but the floor for an offer is 3 first-round picks, which is definitely a lot. Most teams, I think, aren't going to do that, especially if you don't have an infrastructure that's already set up around Wilson that can work. Because if you're giving up that much future picks, you better have a good roster around you. Like the Panthers, for example, they want Watson, and they're going to trade a lot of picks to try to go get Watson. But if you have a team like the Patriots trying to go get Wilson with 3 first-round picks, isn't going to work because right now the roster around Wilson completely would suck if you traded him to the Patriots. If you got him to the Panthers or the Broncos or something, that could work out because you have a young core who is very productive and can get you some wins. As for the Seahawks trading Wilson, I think it makes sense. He's coming into a year where he could, I think, believe opt out and go somewhere else in free agency, which I think is definitely a possibility if you can't get this team moving. And I don't necessarily, with the Rams here probably taking over as number one in the division, and you also have the Cardinals, who I think can definitely jump you with Kyler progressing and DeAndre Hopkins getting even more into the prime of his career, possibly if Kenyon Drake can take a leap. And that defense also can develop a little bit more under Kingsbury. The Seahawks, you're finding yourself third in that division. Do you really want to be there? Like, is it time to reset? I don't think Pete Carroll wants to reset. But logically, is it time to push the reset button, especially with how much money they're paying Wilson and how he might want out of where he's at? It makes sense on the Wilson side to want out of Seattle, I think, because I don't think you're going anywhere in the couple next years, next few years. I don't think you're going anywhere. You got nice young wide receivers. Chris Carson's going to leave, so you're going to have running back problems next year. Cap space has been a problem for a while. The offensive line's struggling. You're picking late in the first round. You're not even picking in the first round, my mistake, because you traded for the Jets for Jamal Adams, who you have to extend to a big contract as well. So where are you going to find this cap space? Where are you going to find these picks to get things around Wilson to better this team? Because if you're going to keep the roster the same, you are not going anywhere with this. So I think it actually might be better off for the Seahawks just to trade Russell Wilson, get those picks, and rebuild. You have a nice young core with DK and Tyler Lockett and all those guys. And Jamal Adams, if you want to re-sign him, not the biggest fan, but Jamal Adams is there. He's a Pro Bowler. So do you want to do that? Or do you want to keep Wilson around? Not really going anywhere. Sell tickets, yes. But do you want to rebuild and try to get back up there? It might take a couple years. So really, the Seahawks are in a stalemate right now with themselves. And it's going to be interesting to see where they go. Personally, I think I actually might want to trade Wilson. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think they're going to trade Wilson this season. I do think Wilson might walk. But I think they want to stay competitive and they're going to keep him, and Wilson might walk, which could be detrimental to that franchise. But nonetheless, I think it could definitely happen. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with some more NFL, including Deshaun Watson and his drama that we've been following the past few weeks. Also, we'll be getting to the Carson Wentz trade, the NBA, and some MLB free agency news. And we're back with some Texans absolute dumpster fire talk. Anyways, as we've been talking about the past few weeks, the Houston Texans, Deshaun Watson, J.J. Watt, the whole entire situation, absolute dumpster fire. Just one of the worst meltdowns that we've seen in the NFL in recent history. Anyways, some of the reporting with Watson, the Raiders are reportedly interested in Watson. I think that's totally false, obviously, because there's reports all over the place that the Raiders want to trade Derek Carr, and then they want to trade Mariota, which is believable because they want to get that big salary off the books. But Carr is definitely staying with the Raiders because they want to sign him to extensions. There's a report about that. So there's no reason that I go get Watson also. Focus on draft capital. You have your guy there already. Derek Carr can probably win you a Super Bowl if you have a good enough team around him. He's a good quarterback. He's underrated. He gets a little too much criticism, I think, for a guy who you still need to put things around him. I mean, Derek Carr had a ton of potential back in 2016 when he took him in the playoffs, and that team was very, very good for a young Derek Carr. And now, you know, some struggles in recent years due to bad defenses and average rosters. But they'll get back in there. The Raiders will be okay. They don't need Deshaun Watson. Also, Watson, he's not prioritizing a trade to the Jets. He'd reportedly be open to trades to the Dolphins. The Panthers have also become a huge suitor for Watson. Also, the Broncos and teams like the 49ers, which I think is completely fine. Watson should be open to a lot of more trades than just the Jets. The Jets, obviously, it's a good situation for the Jets if the Jets want to trade for Watson. It would totally work giving up that draft capital. They have extra capital that they've built up through the Jamal Adams trade and other things that can hold them and keep them building pretty well with Watson there. Now, they're not going to have immediate results once Watson gets there. They'll have better results, certainly, than they had with Sam Darnold. But it's not going to be immediate type of stuff like Watson could have with Carolina, who's probably the best setup with DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel if they get him back, Robbie Anderson, Christian McCaffrey probably will get traded, but you also have Mike Davis back there. Great defense with guys like Brian Burns. That Panthers team is set up for Watson already. You also have the Broncos, who is another team that's set up with young players. Tim Patrick, if they can re-sign him, KJ Hamler, Jerry Jeudy, Melvin Gordon and Philip Lindsay in the backfield. Very good running backs. Lindsay's better when he's the lone tailback, which I wish they would do. But I was also very high on Melvin Gordon when he was with the Chargers. So if he can come back to that, still pretty good. And an improved offensive line with guys like Garrett Bowles emerging. So Broncos, another good information. Destination, not information. Kareem Jackson, who was a corner for the Texans and was a good friend of Watson, he said, and now is a current Denver Bronco. Jackson says Watson has interest in the Broncos. Makes sense. Broncos are kind of that dark horse, no pun intended, candidate to sign Watson and to trade for Watson. They have the capital. They already have the young team set up. Their defense would probably take a little bit of a hit. You'd probably have to trade guys like Bradley Chubb and other things like that. And Von Miller seems to be headed out the door. So you need to rebuild the defense a little bit. But the offense is set up. And with LA sitting down, you have a new GM that wants to make a big splash, wants to get his name out there, and wants to make this team good. And I think this is the big trade that he can make to get on the board and get his name out there and make this Broncos team a winning team. The Broncos, you know, they went and got Manning, and that's what got them over the hump. This is kind of another one of those things. I love Drew Locke. I've been a Drew Locke fan ever since he came out of the draft. And I admit that Locke isn't everything that was advertised. He had a struggling year. I still think he has a lot of potential behind him. But if you can get Deshaun Watson right now, I think you pull the trigger instead of waiting on Drew Locke and hoping that he figures it out. I think you have to go get Deshaun Watson if he is available, which Houston reportedly still doesn't want to trade him. Jack Easterby, just an absolute delusional clown. Nothing worse than the GM of the Texans. And the guy who's pulling all the strings, which is Easterby. Caserio is doing a horrible job already. You thought coming out of New England he'd be fine, but, you know, Easterby is a New England guy too. And Easterby is so bad, so bad. That man should not have a job anywhere near a football. He came in not knowing much about football. I don't even know how he got so far up, just snaking his way up that front office ladder. He's so bad, so bad. And he's destroying the team. They admittedly don't want to trade Watson. Watson wants out so bad. His personal passing coach, who's most likely working out with him a lot right now, tweeted out and wanted him, basically wanted answers on how he can get Watson out of Houston. So they publicly want out. They're not in the front office pissed off Watson so much, the ownership group as well. They're not talking to each other. How do you expect this guy to even be your starting quarterback this season, and you refusing to trade him? You have teams lining up right now to give you 3 first-round picks and a superstar player like the Panthers are, or same with the Broncos with Chubb. I mean, and even the 49ers possibly giving you Garoppolo and a ton of picks, or a piece from their defense or something. I mean, you have teams lining up right now to give you all this capital. And don't you think eventually, even with a guy like Watson, if you wait so long, decline all these offers, don't talk to anybody, teams are eventually going to lose interest and say, no, we're, you know what, the 3 first-round picks, you missed your opportunity. How about 2 and no other player? Just 2 first-round picks, something like that. Just, you're declining his value. I don't think that he's going to go for cheap at all, ever, really. But the longer you wait this out and the longer you embarrass yourself to your fan base, you're losing money because your fan base hates you right now. Everyone in Houston hates Jack Easterby. The dude's a clown show everywhere. Everyone's laughing at the franchise. You'd better off just sell the damn thing right now, because this is just horrible what they're doing over there. I mean, it's ridiculous. They also dismissed their equipment manager. Everybody loved him. The team president, Jamie Roots, he resigned from his position because he realized how bad this team has gotten. Just boosting Easter, that boosts Easterby even farther up the ladder. He's just taking out his higher-ups one by one. This led to J.J. Watt's release. J.J. Watt mutually agreed to get released. They reportedly could have got a solid pick for J.J. Watt, but instead they decided to release him. Now, I think you definitely could have worked with J.J. Watt, and I think teams that he wanted to go to probably offered decent picks, but you decided to release him. Doesn't make a ton of logical sense. If you could have got a solid, it shows the dysfunction in the front office and just on the team. Getting rid of people that the team likes, bringing in people the players hate, releasing players when you could have traded them for a good pick and they probably would have been satisfied going to whatever team you traded to them because you were mutually agreeing. You can let them into the trade search. I mean, you don't have to trade him without his consent to some horrible team. You can let him. You could probably find a trade with the Browns or the Bills or something. I'm sure they'd be willing to give up a 4th-round pick or something for J.J. Watt, if that's what, which is probably the range. So, why? It's stupid. The Steelers, the Browns, and the Bills, they're all interested, with 9 others reportedly. In what I said, the Steelers don't make much sense. You know, TJ and Derek, they're over there. Don't see him going really anywhere with Roethlisberger. Basically, you're probably bringing back the roster you had from last year without Juju. So one team cancer gone, but nothing much there. Kyle McNair also said that Watson wanting out is misinformation. Cal, I would direct you to his personal pen, why he's basically hinting Watson wants out, and why Watson hasn't been in contact with his team ownership, front office, or really any part of the team for the whole entire offseason. Why is your franchise quarterback doing that if it's misinformation he wants out? What could he be possibly indicating besides wanting out from all this? And hints on Twitter and everything. Like, do you really think that he's just messing with us? Because it's not making you look good. Dude, just give it up. Give up the bullcrap. Just say he wants out and trade him. It's really that simple. You effed up. You screwed up. It's on you guys. You guys didn't satisfy your franchise quarterback. You made yourself look like a clown show. You hired the wrong people, and you set up the wrong team. It's a shame that you took a quarterback that's so good and forced him into this just horrible situation. I don't know how you can F it up so bad. This is one of the baddest just screw-ups in NFL history that has happened here with the Texans. Just totally delusional actions by the front office. It's so dumb. It's just so bad. I feel bad for the Houston fans. I feel bad for Deshaun Watson. I feel bad for all of them. But Mr. Cal McNair, Jack Easterby, newly hired GM Nick Caserio, I don't have 1 ounce of sympathy for all of you. And honestly, you guys should all be fired. Straight up. Straight up all fired. For your coaching hiring decisions. For your team management. For pissing off literally everyone in the city of Houston. Including your players. You guys don't know how to run a football team. A toddler can run a football team better than this. It's just completely, it's so bad. You guys are never winning a Super Bowl like this. And if you guys are still in power in the next 5 years, 10 years, you guys aren't sniffing a Super Bowl. And I can fully say that with full confidence. You guys will never sniff a Super Bowl with Jack Easterby anywhere near your building. The best thing for your franchise right now is file a restraining order, fire Jack Easterby, get him out, Cal McNair, take that man's team away. Now, you can't technically do that. There's no reason to take away his team, but, well, actually, maybe, yeah, because for being completely incompetent and just making the Houston franchise and the NFL a complete dumpster fire, hurting the NFL's funds by doing this, and hurting his own funds. I don't know how you can be so dumb, so completely dumb and numb to the situation. It's just, this Deshaun Watson thing, we've been talking about it for the past, like, past month or so, I'd say. Me, Aiden, and Alejandro feel so strongly about how bad this Texans organization is right now. And we don't even hate the Texans. Like, we have no reason to hate the Texans. But just they're incompetent organization and moves and decisions just force us to be so far against the Texans in this podcast. I mean, we've talked about it so much. I could talk about it for days, just how bad this team is. We're not going to do that. We should probably get into some Carson Wentz right now, but oh my God, it pisses me off so much. I feel so bad for Texans fans, but it's just so bad, guys. So bad. Anyways, into Carson Wentz. Before Wentz was traded, the Eagles reportedly getting calls about Wentz from the Texans, the dumpster fire, the Niners, the Bears, and the Colts. Philly wanted 2 first-round picks. They didn't end up with that. They got Wentz for a second and a third from the Indianapolis Colts, reuniting him with head coach Frank Reich, who there was reports that Wentz really and Reich simplified the offense. You know, Reich was the QB coach during Wentz's glory days back in 2017 when he first got drafted. He simplified the offense for Wentz and turned him into that MVP Wentz that we had. Once Reich went, you saw Wentz go downhill, and obviously last season, I think the worst QBR in the league, just very, very, very bad quarterback. Doug Peterson and Wentz reportedly weren't talking for 8 to 10 weeks during the season. Definitely detrimental to that whole entire team's operation. You'd think that the head coach and the quarterback, those are the two. If the head coach should be talking to any position in the NFL, it should probably be the quarterback. That's the one where you need the most communication between the coach and the position. They weren't talking for 8 to 10 weeks. Bad management there by Doug Peterson. Makes, you know, I was a believer, you know, Peterson won a Super Bowl in 2017, Super Bowl 52 with the Philadelphia Eagles. Their first ever Super Bowl in their whole entire history. So, and it was a fast climb with Peterson too. And he was a descendant of obviously Andy Reid's coaching tree. I had a lot of belief in him. But after seeing this, you know, I walk back the claims that Peterson should probably have another coaching job. I mean, 8 to 10 weeks, even if this was initiated by Wentz, come on. How do you do that during the season? If this is how your head coach is going to act with a disgruntled quarterback, just totally just disregard him, not talk to him at all, then I don't know if I want that him as a head coach. Because if he can't have command of the locker room and be able to talk to your – essentially, he was going into the year, your franchise quarterback, not anymore. But essentially, he was. If you can't have your head coach talking to your quarterback for 8 to 10 weeks during the season, that guy should not be in charge because he doesn't have command, obviously, at this point. Wentz to the Colts now. Frank Reich, I think he's going to do wonders for Wentz. I think it's a good trade for the Colts and for the Eagles. You know, when I saw the Eagles wanted 2 first-round picks, that wasn't going to work. And the second-round pick also is conditional. So if the Colts do make the playoffs, which if Wentz can play well, I think he can. You know, Philip Rivers, I was doubting him. He last year wasn't great with the Chargers. His last year there, came to the Colts and, you know, got them to the playoffs. So I'm sure Wentz can probably do the same thing, especially with a coach that he feels comfortable with and probably will play well with. Now, I don't think Wentz is going to be the MVP version of himself that he was before he got hurt and all that. I definitely don't think that. But Wentz will probably play, well, definitely, I could put money on that Wentz will play better than he did last season. He was disgruntled the whole entire season from the Hurts pick. And, you know, his head coach wasn't talking to him and all that. He likes Frank Reich. Frank Reich is the reason, really, why he played so well. So I think in Indianapolis, he'll do better. And also, better weapons. T.Y., if they can get him back. Mo Alie-Cox, if they can get him back. Michael Pittman. Good running backs with Jonathan Taylor. And Nyheim Hines, backfield as a receiving back. So, and obviously, a very, very good offensive line. Anthony Costanzo is departing, but a good offensive line there in Indianapolis. So I think Wentz can definitely work out there. And that will probably turn into a first-round pick. But if Wentz does make the leap to the playoffs, then I think that means that that was worth getting a first-round pick. If Wentz can take this team to the playoffs, I think you found your answer there for at least a few years. And I think Wentz can turn around. He has the physical attributes to do it. He just needs to put his mind to it. And we'll see. Sam Darnold, the Jets quarterback, many teams are inquiring about him, including the Washington football team, the Panthers, and the Colts. The Colts, are out of the picture now. So we have the football team and the Panthers. Should be interesting there. Panthers, I think, are going to go for Watson. I don't see them going for Darnold. And even if they don't go for Watson, I think with that number seven pick, said earlier, Trey Lance is completely in the options for them. Darnold, I think, has potential. He's been under Adam Gase his whole career, so he's been struggling there. His first year, he had 17 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. Really hasn't got the interception problem under control. 2019, he had 19 touchdowns and 13 interceptions. And then this past year, 9 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. So not very good for a young quarterback. Obviously had that interception problem in college. But I think he has the possibility if he has, you know, we've never seen him under good coaching. So say he goes to the football team for a cheap price. I think he could work out there. Ron Revere is a good coach. Taylor Heineke for one game, he was a complete unknown. He coached him into a really good player. Couldn't coach Haskins, but, you know, Haskins is a bit of a troublemaker. You're not going to have that same problem with Sam Darnold. I think Darnold could work out. He has the abilities like these reclamation projects like Wentz. Wentz obviously has a better track record than Darnold. Darnold's younger, though, and he played under Adam Gase. So, in a dumpster fire offense with a team that could have gone 0-16, which was the New York Jets. So, I think Darnold, if he can have a stable offense like the football team with Terry McLaurin, Logan Thomas, guys like that, Antonio Gibson, I think that could work out for him. And I'd like to see that, but you can't give up too much. Like a second round pick, I think actually might be a little too much. Third round pick, if you have to give up a second, it is what it is. But I think giving Darnold a shot, like taking a shot, a flyer on Darnold works out. But I don't see Darnold really taking a huge leap because you can only go so far from 9 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. He's never really been super, super efficient. I mean, his quarterback rating this past season was 72.7. His average over his three-year career is a 78.6, so nothing too special. His completion percentage has been ugly, averaging a 59.8 over his three seasons. So, also, only once going over 3,000 yards because of some on and off seasons. But it's risky, but you shouldn't be giving up a first round pick, obviously. Like first round. Also, for the Steelers, this would work out really well. Steelers, decent offense, and Roethlisberger doesn't seem like he's gonna do much if he does stay. I think that, as I've said, I think Roethlisberger should have retired a little bit ago. I don't think he has a ton in the tank. He still, you know, he can still play quarterback, but I don't think he has a ton left. Set up with Darnold. Try it out for at least a year. See what can happen. I think Mike Tomlin can do good with him. I think Pittsburgh could work well. And also Ron Rivera in Washington could work out really well. So we'll see there. Juju Smith-Schuster was hinting at the Chargers on a Twitch live stream. Also kind of, not to poke at Juju for a minor thing, but a little bit immature. Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of Juju over here and his off-field antics. He's a great guy. Off the field, does a lot for charities and stuff. So we've been harsh on him in the past, but that one a little immature. Also, the Jets are eyeing Juju Smith-Schuster and Will Fuller. Will Fuller, I think, can be a great wide receiver for the Jets. They have enough cap. Also, the Patriots could be a good destination for Fuller. Obviously, Fuller is going to get out of that Texans organization. There's no way he's staying there. Like every impending Texans free agent, I think, should get out of there. It makes no sense to stay over there at this point. Will Fuller could make a lot of sense there. Juju maybe on the Jets. No, I'd pass if I were the Jets. A lot of these teams I'd pass because Juju just with the off-field stuff. I mean, if you can manage his TikTok antics and stuff and keep him under control, sure. Like Fuller's way easier to manage, and I think Fuller probably is a more complete player if he can stay healthy. Just puts up better production overall. And I think he can be more of a true kind of number one if you gave him a shot. Juju's more of that number two type of guy. Needs a guy in front of him or a guy beside him to really open him up and make him a good player. Chargers could work for Juju. You got Keenan Allen also there. So that one could definitely work out. Nice little 1-2 punch there over in LA. Could certainly work. Raiders, they're also interesting. Juju Smith-Schuster, they just released wide receiver Tyrell Williams, who was injured pretty much all last season, but put up pretty decent stats around, I think, 851. He's had one season over 1,000 yards, which was with the Chargers. It has been pretty decent. Overall, usually a number two wide receiver. That one's going to free up $11 million for the Raiders, so they're going to be in the wide receiver market. So Juju could make sense. Juju also wants to go kind of back to that West Coast area if he can't stay in Pittsburgh, which I think he probably will leave. So with the Raiders and the Chargers already having interest, I think both of those make sense. Juju in Las Vegas could make a lot of sense. Him being the number one over there, I wouldn't necessarily love, but it could happen, and they need wide receiver help. So if you got to do what you got to do. Also, putting him with Henry Ruggs, having that speed on both sides would be absolutely insane. Like I said, with the Chargers with Keenan Allen and Juju could also be pretty good as well. So nice little tandems that you'd have on both teams for Juju, and I think that'd make a lot of sense. And also, I think just lightly touching on Tyrell Williams. Tyrell Williams isn't going to get a lot of money in the open market anymore just because he's kind of been a little bit forgotten. But if you remember what Tyrell Williams did in LA and Oakland for that one season that he was healthy, still a pretty good wide receiver. I think the Patriots, if they can get him on a cheap contract, I love Tyrell Williams over here. Not a lot of people are going to be talking about Tyrell Williams. And if Belichick really wants to save cap space despite having a ton of it, like stay in his old type of ways, I think getting Tyrell Williams over here could work wonders for this Patriots offense, and I think that could be a nice little cheap option, especially when Allen Robinson, I don't think, is going to come over here, and you also have Galladay and other top wideouts getting the tag, like Chris Godwin. Those guys are going to get tagged. So really, Tyrell is going to be, first of all, you're not going to have to trade anything for him. He's going to be cheap, and he's going to put up good production for you. Now, he's not the end-all, be-all for the wide receiver position, obviously, for the Patriots, but Tyrell could definitely work. DeSean Jackson, also another guy. He's older, so it probably won't happen for him with the Pats, but another option there, DeSean Jackson, if anybody needs a deep threat or something like that, they have him there. That could also be another option for the Chargers if they want to go get something. Or maybe he joins the Bucs if Antonio Brown leaves or something like that. DeSean Jackson could work well over there. Also, the Eagles, while releasing DeSean Jackson, are also releasing Alshon Jeffrey. I saw some backlash from Eagles fans supporting this move, which is surprising. Eagles fans usually don't support any move. But they were supporting this Alshon Jeffrey move maybe a little bit harshly, because I think Alshon Jeffrey, you know, he basically helped you win a Super Bowl, dominating Eric Rowe in Super Bowl 52. So I'd be a little more gracious to him. Maybe Alshon, if Allen Robinson stays in Chicago, goes back to Chicago, and they can have that nice little 1-2 punch like they had with Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall. Obviously won't be as good as that, because Jeffrey's older now. But that could be a nice little setup there for whoever quarterbacks that Chicago team, which right now it's leaning towards Nick Foles, but who knows who's going to be the starting quarterback over there. It certainly doesn't look like it's going to be Mitch Trubisky, but we'll see. But if Jeffrey wants to do that, he can. The Buccaneers, obviously a possibility as well. Patriots not really seeming like a possibility over there. Maybe the Bills, like for DeSean Jackson or Alshon Jeffrey, could also work. Adding someone with Stephon Diggs and John Brown could certainly work. These guys are going to be cheap contracts because they're older and not as proven anymore, so we'll see. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with some more NFL, just some quick little points about Michael Thomas and Von Miller potentially being gone. Then we'll be back also with some NBA and MLB. And we're back with some more NFL really quickly, actually. Only two more topics left. Our first one is the Patriots. And a question, can the Patriots land Michael Thomas from the New Orleans Saints? Now, the Saints right now are in cap hell and probably would be better off not paying Michael Thomas a huge salary. So there's been some rumors that Thomas might be on the move. And if he is, can the Patriots go and get him? The Patriots, ton of cap space. First of all, over $60 million. And there's also rumors that they can restructure a lot of contracts with Hightower and maybe restructure something with Gilmore if he wants to stay around. And they could possibly land even more cap. Also, McCourty in there with a restructure, possibly. Thomas, great wide receiver, obviously. A lot of yardage. Didn't get much this year, but had a lot of injuries going on. Still produced pretty well with Breeze at quarterback not being too productive. As we know, Saints and cap hell right now, probably want to get out of that. And honestly, the price, it seems, in a lot of the rumors was like a second or third round pick. And if I can get Michael Thomas on my Patriots for that cheap, I'm getting Michael Thomas on a plane right now, doing the deal and getting him over here, because the Patriots need a wide receiver right now. And if you can get someone like Michael Thomas for that cheap of a deal, I'm going for it. You have the cap space, and right now you need weapons. So Michael Thomas would be, I think, a perfect fit in New England. A little bit of some off-field problems with his Twitter use and stuff, which I've gone on him before about, but I think he'll be okay. He'll be fine in New England. Really, New England just needs to find that quarterback right now, whether it be Garoppolo, Fitzpatrick, Mariota, who I'm really interested in. But we'll see. I think a second round pick for Thomas, I'd be totally in on that one, especially when you're able to keep number 15 overall and get Michael Thomas over here. Also, there's rumors about Gilmore for Odell and stuff. There's a lot of paths that the Patriots can go for a wide receiver, but if you can give up a second round pick or a third even to get Michael Thomas, I'm doing that all the way. Still a young wide receiver, very, very good, good production with Breeze, and I think that would be a perfect option for the Patriots. Von Miller is also reportedly going to be released from the Broncos. They don't want to pick up his option, so he's going to be gone. So now you have Watt and Miller also on the open market. Watt, you know, very good player. Vaughn still putting up very good production. I think Vaughn's probably the better option here, but the money might be there. I think Watt's more open to pay cuts than Miller would be. You know, Miller already has a Super Bowl. I think he wants to cash in a little bit more. So it'll be interesting to see there. I don't see Miller, well, really any of the teams that, like the Bills, the Browns, and the Packers, the teams, and the Steelers, teams that are interested in Watt, I think they're all going to be in on Von Miller if he hits the open market. So the Bills would be very interesting for Von Miller. The Packers also another interesting option, although they might want to cut some salary over there. But I think those could also be very interesting options. I think he wants to get another Super Bowl, but also I think he wants to get paid a little more than probably Watt would, because Watt's really just trying to get that Super Bowl at this point. So it'll be interesting to see. Now on to the NBA. De'Aaron Fox and LeBron James, they came out past few weeks saying that they don't want the All-Star game, which will be happening because of COVID and things like that. Now, my whole position on this, I know Alejandro and Aiden kind of have a counter position to this, that they think that it's okay for Fox and LeBron to not want the All-Star game. First of all, Fox won't even be in the All-Star game, so it doesn't really matter really what he says. But LeBron says gets around the league pretty well. And he said he doesn't really care for the All-Star game this year. The All-Star game is a money thing for the NBA. And if you're under contract to go play in the All-Star game, you go play in the All-Star game. And I think, you can opt out of the All-Star game. That's completely fine, I'm pretty sure. So if you don't want to play in the All-Star game, just do that, honestly. But if not, it's your job. Go play in the All-Star game. You're already playing on a night-to-night basis anyways. Going to the All-Star game really won't make that big of a difference. So just go play in the All-Star game. It's a event for the NBA to make money and things like that. And overall, it's a business and you got to do your job. So off the court, they don't seem to have much problems with going around and doing things. So what's the big deal with going somewhere else to do your job? I just don't get it. So I think LeBron's just complaining here. I'm sure we'll talk about this next week and get some more insight on it. But I just – and it'll be interesting to see going into the All-Star game what it's going to be like, but I just don't see it there. Knicks also acquired Derrick Rose for Dennis Smith Jr. and draft compensation. Dennis Smith Jr. wasn't getting much minutes for the Knicks. He actually requested to go down to the G League for them because he wasn't getting any minutes, which is kind of a shame. So it's good that Dennis Smith Jr. is going to the Pistons. He'll get way more minutes over there. Also, compensation, that's what they need. The Pistons weren't going to do anything with Derrick Rose. Rose still productive. Going back to the Knicks, it should be interesting that the Knicks are actually competing a little bit right now. They're in kind of a good position. The back of the East right now, but we'll see what happens there. They're 7th in the Eastern Conference, 15 and 16. They're competing. Julius Randle's playing amazing for them, playing like an all-star, probably will be an all-star for them. So that will be interesting to see. I think Rose can make a big difference there. Emmanuel Quickley, also another guard who's playing really well for them, so we'll see there. Raptors also have interest in Andre Drummond, and Drummond's sitting for a trade. The Cavs are sitting him down and seeing what they get for him. I said this last year when the Cavs trade for him at the deadline. That was super cheap trade. Only had traded like 2 second-round picks, and I think Brandon Knight. So really cheap trade there, and now they're going to try to get the most out of him. The Raptors, I think it makes a lot of sense for them. They need a big guy after losing Marc Gasol. Chris Boucher and Pascal Siakam, still pretty good down low, but having Drummond down there as a rebounder and a shot blocker, I think can be very good for them. Not, he can't do much on the outside, but inside the paint is great. That's why I think he could be good for the Celtics. Celtics choking leads constantly. I mean, the Celtics are very bad right now. They could definitely use someone inside if they don't play Robert Williams more. Tristan Thompson is just so underwhelming, and Drummond is a huge upgrade over that. So if the Celtics can get him, that would be really good. Raptors, not a ton of problems down low, but definitely an upgrade after losing Marc Gasol. Boucher and Drummond, I think, could work really good together in tandem and also open up more opportunities, Siakam, with people having to guard Drummond. And definitely going to get any team that Drummond goes to, the rebounding numbers are going to go up. And it makes sense for the Cavs to get rid of him too, because they trade for him to get rid of him as kind of a investment type thing to get more in the end, which they eventually will. They also have Jared Allen there now, and they need to develop him and have him play. So we have that. Blake Griffin's also sitting for a trade. Him, not really sure where he's going to land, not sure where he fits. Has been a little underwhelming, only averaging around 13 points per game this season, but we'll see there with Blake. Definitely not the player that he used to be, but we'll definitely see with him. The Hawks are also willing to trade John Collins. They don't want to give him a huge contract. They paid a lot in free agency for guys like Danilo Gallinari. They also added Rajon Rondo. So it makes sense that they want to get rid of him. They also have young guys like DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish who are kind of on cheaper contracts, and they're ready to step in. And also Clint Capella is also already down there. So maybe playing a little bit of a smaller lineup if you want to put Reddish and Hunter in the starting lineup and kind of bump Collins out, who's already kind of a small power forward. Collins could work for teams like the Celtics again. Celtics free chest really need help. As a Celtics fan myself, they need a ton of help. The Nets really aren't in play for anybody besides for a Drummond if Drummond does get a buyout. But we'll see with Collins. Zach LaVine trade is unlikely. Zach LaVine's playing out of his mind. The Bulls don't want to give him up, and he's still young. So that one, I never really saw it happening, and I think everybody on the podcast doesn't think that the Zach LaVine trade will ever happen. But it could. Last season, it would make a lot more sense, but now that they have the core of Kobe White, LaVine, Wendell Carter, and all that, I just don't see it happening. And LaVine's playing out of his mind. So it'd be crazy to give him up right now. And whoever would have to trade for him right now would be giving up a ton for LaVine. And I don't think really anybody's in the position to go get LaVine. Jason Tatum, he said COVID's still affecting him. Lately, Tatum's been playing better, but he had a 6-point game against the Hawks, I believe, in the first one, and then kind of came back after that. You can see that he's struggling. I wouldn't say it's COVID thing, but it could be. At least that's what he's saying. The team is just really struggling. Choking leads. We saw the Pelicans game. Celtics versus the Pelicans. They had a 24-point lead in third quarter and choked that one all the way down into overtime and lost that game. The Celtics just really struggling. They need help on the inside. That's why I think Drummond is a perfect fit for them. They also need bench shooting and all that. But Brad Stevens, this team can't hold onto leads. And that's very frustrating. Brad Stevens seems to be overrated as of right now. And I actually tweeted out that I think I'm more on the fire Brad movement right now. The season looks like it's going down the hole. I'd give it way a little bit more time. But the Celtics have the roster to be competing for a championship, but they aren't putting it together. And it seems like they need more pieces or a coaching change, something like that, because they are going down the hole right now. Rockets are also releasing DeMarcus Cousins. This is an interesting one. Cousins just signed with the Rockets, but the Rockets kind of falling apart. They also had, because of the Harden trade, obviously, they're getting younger and want younger players. They could also still flip Oladipo at the trade deadline, who's been playing pretty well for them. Cousins also playing pretty decent, and we'll probably find a home. LA is a possibility. The Lakers, a reunion there, but that's probably not going to happen based off of recent reports. And, you know, any team that really needs a center over there, Cousins could help them out, and he's going to go to a contender. There's no reason for him to go anywhere else besides that. Maybe a reunion with the Pelicans could possibly happen, but maybe not. But we'll see there with DeMarcus Cousins. Now on to the MLB. Chris Archer, he signed a one-year, $6 million deal to go back in Tampa. Tampa really just losing the mind. Chris Archer, obviously not the player that he used to be. Tampa traded Blake Snell. They had a World Series team. They're in the World Series last year. I don't even think they're going to make the playoffs this year with the roster that they have right now. Their franchise is very cheap. I don't see them going anywhere this year. Archer, decent pitcher, but not a number one anymore. Kind of a throwaway signing. We'll see what happens there, though. Trevor Bauer, he got a three-year, $102 million deal from the Dodgers after playing with teams all fans of teams' hearts all season. He finally signs with the LA Dodgers. They got a really good rotation going there with Urias, Walker Buehler, now Trevor Bauer also there, Clayton Kershaw. Really good rotation that they have going on. Obviously, Jansen as their closer. Dodgers look like they could definitely repeat. I'm surprised that they spent so much on Bauer, but we'll see there. I mean, the Dodgers look like they can definitely repeat. But you also have the Padres signing Fernando Tatis to a 14-year, $340 million extension, definitely deserved. The Padres and the Dodgers right now are going to be such an entertaining matchup, especially because they're already in their same division, so they're going to be playing each other a lot. That's just the NLCS practically. Every single time that they play. I mean, that's going to be awesome. You have the awesome rotation from the Dodgers, the awesome lineup that you have for the Padres, and also the Padres have a good rotation now, too, with Snell in there. So we'll see here, but Tatis getting the extension he deserves definitely keeps him in San Diego practically his whole career already. It's super young. It's crazy how he already has that big of an extension. And Bauer getting the three-year 102 from the Dodgers should be interesting. Andrew Benintendi of the Boston Red Sox, after having a bad season last season, he's traded to the Kansas City Royals for Franchi Cordero. The Mets also got Khalil Lee. Some more prospects coming to the Red Sox in this three-team trade. Should be interesting for the Royals. I think the Royals won this one, depending on how the prospects turn out, obviously. But Benintendi, I don't like how the Red Sox sold so short. Also, Cordero's 26. A little bit of an older prospect. Hopefully he can do something. He just actually got placed on the COVID list. So as of right now, it looks like pretty unlikely that he can do much right now. Spring training just starting. But Benintendi, I think actually he's going to play well for the Royals. I think this is going to bite the Red Sox. But the Red Sox right now, trying to build up their farm system, so it makes sense after Dombrowski pretty much destroyed it in getting them the 2018 championship. So what cost for championships, just went and destroyed the farm system to get a chip, which, I mean, I'm sure the fans of Boston are fine with that. But Benintendi leaving, win, dance, repeat, destroyed now that Benintendi's gone, Mookie's gone, and JBJ most likely gone. Still hasn't signed, but most likely gone. So a sad day for Boston and Andrew Benintendi, who's still a really young player. And for a rebuilding Royals team, could possibly turn out to be one of the better players on that team and could maybe do some damage if he can go back to his old form from those World Series years. That's going to be it for Sports Report Podcast, episode 35. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Plug some things really quick. Follow us on Instagram at Sports Report Podcast. Follow me at Sport Rep Billy. Follow Alejandro at Alejandro underscore SRP. Follow Aiden. Oh, this is on Twitter, by the way. Follow Aiden at Aiden SRP. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We couldn't do it without you. Also, for clips, subscribe to us on YouTube. Watch some videos there. We also upload sports highlights and everything over there. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with, actually Friday, with Sports Report Podcast, episode 36. See you.